Quite frankly, what you've pointed to is the big problem in the craft distilling industry right at the moment, which is a glut.
This project really is sort of a love letter to Australian wine.
We want to bring people back into rum and not scare them off.
A maritime Tassie single malt whisky felt like the right thing for the three of us to do.
In a perfect world, all the best grapes from the best vineyards would go into the hands of the best winemakers. Doesn't always happen that way.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Two Doctors is a whiskey company founded, as the name suggests, by two doctors, Surgeon Jerry Schwartz and Professor John Rasko, AO, a clinical hematologist, pathologist, and scientist. Professor Rasko is with us this episode to discuss his epic side hustle, which utilises the brewing equipment at Sydney Brewery's production facility in the Hunter Valley, New South Wales. The brewery and distillery are based at Ridges Resort Hunter Valley, one of numerous hotels owned by Jerry's other business, Schwartz Family Company, which is the largest privately owned hotel group in Australia. Jerry's backing has empowered Two Doctors to take an uncompromising approach to whiskey production, focused on premium single barrel releases aged for a minimum of 6 years, mostly in barrels supplied by local Hunter Valley wineries. Well, Professor John Rasko, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Absolute delight, James. It's fantastic to be with you.
Your story, the story of Two Doctors, is probably a little bit unconventional in the world of spirits. Take me back to how this idea was conceived and how you managed to rope Jerry into it.
Yeah, well, look, we really are two doctors. That's established as a fact, but the rest is kind of shrouded in mystery and fog. But over a decade ago, I was, a frustrated wine drinker and potential winemaker, and Jerry was a hotelier, general practitioner, and owner of a brewery. And I realized that a solution to my frustrations in making some form of alcoholic beverage to enjoy was to basically stalk him. And so I planned this attack, which was basically, I said, Jerry, you've got a brewery. He said, yes, because we're old mates. And he said, what's your interest? And I said, well, do you know what whiskey is, Jerry? And being Jerry, he looked at me with his head askew and said, no, I actually don't think I know what whiskey is. And I said, Jerry, whiskey is distilled beer. And he's, you could just see the neurons firing in his brain. And he just looked at me straight away and he said, oh, we've got to do it. We've got to do it. And that was the start of Two Doctors Whiskey, where we did all the research. We got Peter Bailey down in Tasmania we designed with him specific, bespoke, beautiful full copper stills, 1,800 litre wash still and an 800 litre spirit still. They're both beautiful, magnificent stills, best made in Australia. And essentially then for the last 10 years, we've been refining our whiskey. And, we were very, very strict from the beginning. It was always going to be technical. Two doctors, one a scientist, researcher. Every decision was whichever was the hardest, whichever was the one that was the better, we would choose that one because money was really no object. And we weren't going to mess around with gin or any other kind of clear spirits. We were singularly focused on whiskey as our interest. And that was where we were going to go. And that's where we've stayed. So we've never diluted or changed our focus. And I guess the evidence of that is that we waited 6 years to release our very first product.
And actually, maybe take me back, like, when did you actually develop an interest in whiskey? And the other element of it as well is that you've actually gone out and got yourself professional distilling qualifications as well.
That's right.
So maybe fill in some of those gaps.
Well, I think once a scientist and someone trained in science with a PhD decides to do something, you go all in. And so I read a large number of books and, yes, then developed professional qualifications and pursued this like anything else, like a specific professional task in terms of professional training. And, you've got to keep mindful of all of the occupational health and safety aspects of these things. It's not a joke. There's a lot of responsibility in operating what can be potentially explosive equipment. So with all of the beauty and art and romance involved in this project, there's also a lot of serious behind-the-scenes activities. And so I take that extremely seriously, and the responsibilities of that are not to be diminished.
And was that the IBD qualification that you did?
Yeah, it was. That's right, the Institute of Brewing and Distilling. I have been a whiskey lover for many, many years. But as I mentioned at the very top, I've also been a great drinker and indeed a taster, a professional taster of wines. So over many, many years, I've acquired a palate where I can describe the flavors and textures and aromas of liquid alcoholic beverages in all their beauty. And so I love all my children. I love beer, I love spirits, and I love wine as well, and have acquired over the years a significant knowledge of all of those. Nonetheless, in terms of whiskies, I really do like a light, fruity whiskey. I really love the Campbelltown whiskies. Not to say that I dismiss anything from Illa or any of the extraordinarily clean whiskies from Japan and other places in the world. I crave variety. I don't want to drink the same whiskey every night, as much as there are whiskies that I love every time I drink them. So we are always going to be a single malt, single barrel, because we think that offers that opportunity for individuals to enjoy the variety of the expressions that we have produced over the last 10 years.
Tell me about your distilling ethos, and we should probably start with the wash. I mean, obviously, you're drawing upon Jerry's resources there with Sydney Brewery. So maybe just talk me through the whole process and the different sort of stylistic choices that you made along the way.
Yeah, thanks, James. That's actually crucially important, and that's one of the things that I think a lot of drinkers just don't even spare a thought for, but one that gives us enormous amount of joy, in fact, because that's where I think everything starts. So yes, it's true. I've parasitized, in a sense, Jerry's brewing infrastructure and taken advantage of what is a massive brewery. I mean, over 100,000 litres of beer produced by Sydney Brewery in all its more than a dozen different varieties. So yes, that infrastructure has meant that I've been able to kickstart a lot of the aspects to produce what is a very specific wash. Nonetheless, it's not like we're just using any old wash that happens to come out of the brewery. So we've always used the Weyermann Pilsner barley. This malted barley is absolutely spectacular because it gives a beautiful, clean, yeasty wash. And I don't know how many washes you've seen from Scotland and elsewhere in the world, but they're pretty ugly looking beasts when they actually go into the still. Although we don't obviously filter our wash to the extent that a beautiful, crystal clear beer is made at, we actually do pass it through a number of steps that make it very, very fine and very clear. And I actually am happy to drink our wash as a beer. It's that clean and that right. So we basically ferment for 4 or 5 days to get it just where we want it, around about the 9-10% alcohol. That is then taken up to the high 20s, usually about 29-30% as our first distillation process. And then that goes into the spirit still, and we take it up 65-70%, and then cut it down to 63% before we put it in a cask. So the process has been refined over, it took me about 2 years to get it to the point where we knew what we wanted to do. And really, if we're going to discuss cuts, they're extremely tight. We taste every single distillation step that we do. We find that the aroma and the taste of the process gives us a quality control second to none. Obviously, we measure temperatures. We measure all of the different aspects of the pressure differentials during the process. But for us, when we decide to start our hearts and when we decide to finish our hearts, that's determined by tasting throughout every single run. And typically, that's between around about 75 down to 65% and below, all the way down on this spirit run. So it's a process that we've refined over a period of time, and we don't feel like we can cut corners in terms of our cuts.
I think from the outset, the fact that you're not using Australian barley would probably be quite a unique thing in this country.
I think that's probably true. We have been always extremely keen to focus on geographical authenticity. We've tried our best to source everything locally, and I think we've achieved that in many, many ways. But yes, you're absolutely right. We have done experiments with other barleys, and we're continuing to do so. Indeed, we have a few expressions, despite what I said earlier, of peated barley that we purchased as well. And that can be sourced variously from Australia and in particular New Zealand, interestingly. But nonetheless, we found that this German Pilsner malted barley is just what we need to give that beautiful, malty and yet fruity flavour that comes through in the new make spirit.
Now, you're in wine country there, John. So does that mean that you've got a lot of local barrels in your barrel store there?
Yeah, that's absolutely speaking to our geographical authenticity. So we have sourced all of our barrels from around the Hunter Valley. So we have been very proud to be able to source barrels from Tyrrells, from Petersons, from Broken Wood, from Audrey Peterson, from a number of other wine makers in the valley. We've typically sourced red wine barrels, and our secret weapon for 10 years has been having our own cooper. And so what we do with those ex-red wine, perfectly gorgeous, typically Grand Cru French and American oak barrels, is to shave them to a couple of more millimetres than where they were. We've looked at variations on that where we don't shave, for example, the heads, but essentially we shave them. Then we re-toast them and char them to about a 4 out of 5 level char, which we have evolved over time to be specifically what we want. That's exactly where we want it. And our cooper, Gary Jansen, in the valley, has been doing that for 10 years. And more recently, Aaron Bunt, who is our assistant distiller and cooper, has taken over that responsibility. So meticulous attention to barrel management and barrel care has been one of our secret weapons, I think, in achieving exactly what we wanted. And we've looked at variations in char. We've looked at variations in, for example, burning without actually doing any shaving. And that, of course, brings even more caramel flavors because you're actually burning some of the sugars that are residual left in the wood from the wine. We have used some white wine barrels as well, and that doesn't require as much shaving, so that's quite a difference. And one thing that I will emphasize is that we've also sourced from various wineries some export barrels from some wineries that have even now passed on due to the age of the owners rather than the barrels. And we've also imported magnificent 50-year-old Jerez, Ex Amontillado, Sherry Port barrels, 500-litre butts. And we didn't do it in a small way. We imported a number of dozen of them because we think that sherry cask maturation at the very end, so-called finishing with a sherry flavour, is something we really do like to add in some of our expressions. So that is an option. And to that extent, I don't think anyone can match 50-year-old Jerez sherry casks. So those butts are very precious to us, and we treat them like the old creatures that they are. They're magnificent objects to look at.
And I think there's been a bit of debate recently over what a single cask whiskey is, what the strict definition is. So it sounds like a single cask whiskey might have made its way through a couple of different types of wood.
You've really made an important point, and I think we've got to distinguish what a legal definition is from what most people understand, because I think we can separate out the difference between maturation and finishing. So I think, to me, although I want to emphasize that at least for our first few expressions, they have only ever seen a single 225 to 330-litre barrel. So that's it. That is truly single barrel. You can't argue with that. But I think in the future, we have every intention to basically combine one or two barrels in a butt, a 500-litre butt, and that would be finishing what would be an otherwise matured whiskey. And I can live with that level of ambiguity, if you will, but I do agree that there is a little bit of confusion. We want to be authentic, and I want to emphasize that we will be explaining that to our drinkers and the people who support us in the detailed notes that we provide for all of our whiskies that we release.
Well, tell us about release one and what's going to be the schedule of releases from here on in.
Yeah, so we began with our 10th barrel. That was 6 years old. It's cask 10, surprisingly or not. And that is a beautiful expression that we released through Kemeny's, a liquor outlet available online. And they distribute for us. That is just our first foray into, a soft launch. It's been available since December 2022, and it's basically sold out at this stage. And we've moved on to our second expression, which is cask 15. So, for example, another level of commitment has been that we've never messed around with anything less than hogsheads. So I'm not interested, I'm sorry, with 20, 50 or 100 litre barrels. I just don't think that anyone serious in this business is going to be making a whiskey in anything less than that size. And we can talk about the reasons, the scientific reasons, why using a larger barrel format I think is better. The idea of accelerating maturation is something that enthralls everyone in the whiskey business, but I think there are fundamental scientific reasons and principles why aging with time is really fundamental to the taste profile of what we all recognize as super premium whiskies. I mean, anyone, even blind or otherwise, can tell the difference between a whiskey that's very old and that is significantly younger, although it fulfills the legal definition of whiskey. But I digress. The idea that we can mature whiskey in the way that we've just described is something that requires a commitment to time. And I do think using the larger format, hogsheads and above, is a way that we can achieve the taste profile and actually the textures that we want to achieve in our whiskey. And I think that's something that's often ignored in whiskey tasting and even notes provided by whiskey tasters. How does it feel in your mouth? And we've got this beautiful oily texture that really coats the mouth and I think leads to a flavor profile that for me is one of the hallmarks of a truly great whiskey, which is length. I mean, when people say, well, you know, is it fruity? Is it peaty? Is it malty? You know, what are the profiles? We can use vast amounts of flowery language and we've all read beautiful descriptions of whiskey over time. And I'm very happy to offer my descriptions of what are some of the thematic consistencies in our whiskey. But in the end, how long it lasts in your mouth after you've taken that gentle swallow is really a fundamental determinant of, yeah, the beauty and the joy out of drinking a lovely dram.
For sure. One thing I noticed as well is you spelt whiskey with an E, which is sort of more the Irish, Japanese, American spelling. Was that a conscious decision?
You are a very wise man. It was absolutely not an accident. It was not a spelling error. I was arguing with Jerry only a couple of days ago by email, as we often do, because, you know, two passionate individuals who've been pursuing this folly over so many years. And basically we just agreed, look, we're both type A personalities and we're never going to agree on certain things. And so, you know, it's the joy of having a partnership and pursuing these things as enthusiastic individuals that keep us energized. And that actually comes down to things like points of difference. So I am very, very proud of the fact that we added the E, and there was a lot of thought gone into it. And the reason is because I actually think we taste more like an Irish whiskey than we do a Scotch whiskey. And so in pursuing the E as our proud trademarked name, as well as our classification, we decided that the E was an important point of difference, and proudly so. So yes, you'll find that oftentimes you might look in the list and you'll see that most Australian whiskies, if not pretty much all, have decided to spell, or maybe they just didn't even think about it, they just spelt their whiskey without the E. We've used the E.
How often do you think you're going to have a new release on the market? And you mentioned the Kemeny's arrangement for the first release, but moving forward, you know, how are you going to sell the whiskey? Because I think some people would say that in a way, the easy part is making it, the hard part is selling it, especially in the current market where there's a lot of Australian whiskey kind of hitting the market as we speak.
From the very beginning, I've had a secret weapon that virtually no one else in Australia has got access to, and that's a ready-made retail series of shops, which are Jerry's Hotels. So all around the eastern seaboard of Australia, from Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria and elsewhere, Jerry has about 15 hotels as magnificent as the Sofitel in the Darling Harbour, World Square in Sydney, Surry Hills Ridges, out in Crown Plaza, or now called the Ridges Resort in the Hunter Valley, the Vic in Victoria, one of the oldest hotels there, and hotels in Queensland. All of the gift shops and bars in those hotels is a ready-made opportunity to sell and offer people nips and tastes, as well as our cocktails. And we have also had at our premier flagship bar, which is the Two Doctors Whiskey Tavern at the Fairmont Lura, in the most magnificent Megalong Valley there up in Lura, is our bespoke flagship bar, which has been going for about 2 years already, and we've been refining our cocktails. So for 2 years, you've been able to purchase two old-fashioned doctors, and you can guess what cocktail that is, and you can purchase Two Doctors in France, which is our riff on a boulevardier, using our three-year-old cocktail whiskey. And so that's available, and that's been available.
So that's a younger expression than the product that's available to buy.
That's right. And you can purchase from those retail outlets as well as online. But, you know, I think there's still an open question, which is, okay, John, that's fine, but what if we don't want to go to these hotels? What if we can't physically get there, or we don't want to use the current rather limited distribution that you've got? And that's, you know, a major issue in terms of finding the right distributor, because quite frankly, what you've pointed to is the big problem in the craft distilling industry right at the moment, which is a glut. I mean, we just have a vast number of gins, because everybody would love the idea of making, I guess, whiskey. No one, I think, really starts off not wanting to make whiskey. They all know that they need to turn a dollar by selling some kind of product, and that's often, you know, a gin or some variation thereof, a clear spirit, because they can sell it from day one. They don't need to mature it in wood. We've had the ability to be able to afford the sunk costs and capital to be able to be patient. And that's why I don't think there's any other whiskey distiller in Australia that has ever waited 6 years before their first release. And so we're very proud of that. That's a point of distinction that I would defy anyone to match if they possibly can, especially at the scale that we have. I mean, we've now got over 100,000 litres of new make spirit under wood, and that number expands, of course, every week. Nonetheless, we are in the process of negotiating distributors, the more familiar large-scale distributors, so everybody can get a taste of what I think is one of Australia's super premium craft whiskies.
But in the meantime, they can still buy it from the website?
That's correct. They can go to our website, which is the twodoctorswhiskey.com.au website, or they can go to Kemeny's directly, either way, and very soon they'll be able to buy it in their favourite whiskey bar, or indeed through retail outlets.
And yeah, I mean, you've spoken about the long maturation and the fact that you really haven't cut any corners whatsoever. And I guess that's reflected in the price tag, the $295. Was there a lot of debate and thought that kind of went into, you know, what price point should we be trying to hit here?
This is our super premium craft bespoke whiskey. We are in the process of developing a Solera, which will be a lower entry level whiskey. And I would emphasize that if people want to have a taste, they can go to our bars, but more importantly, mean that you can purchase a test tube or a gift pack with droppers, water droppers, which we include in the pack. And that will allow individuals to taste a couple of different expressions of our whiskey, exactly the same that go into our $295 recommended retail price single malt, and be able to decide for themselves whether it's as good as I think it is, and whether or not that price point is the sweet spot for this particular whiskey.
You've obviously got a very demanding medical career. How have you managed to have the distilling and the medicine careers coexisting with one another? Because I must imagine you would be a very busy man indeed.
Well, thank you for noticing. I do have a day job. And so it started off in inverted commas as a hobby. This was a fantastic journey that Jerry and I started more than a decade ago. And we really spent a lot of time planning it. But because of the infrastructure that Jerry has in the brewery, I've been able to train assistant distillers and essentially has been one of the great secret weapons again that we've had to be able to achieve things. So we talk on almost a daily basis and I'm able therefore after hours to be able to keep things going in a forward direction and yet maintain that level of attention to detail that if you take your eyes off the wheel, off the road for any time, you're going to make mistakes and things are going to go wrong. So the responsibility of maintaining everything at the highest level is reflected. You know, we talked about our packaging before. It's reflected in every aspect. Everything that we do has been given careful consideration, right down to the addition of the E in whiskey. Everything has been given careful attention. We've thought about it carefully. And I think that is how we've been able to achieve things because we're a team. Nothing can be done by yourself. And so truth be known, there's probably a dozen people who are directly involved in keeping the production going, as well as maintaining all of the other back of house things like invoicing and marketing, distribution, and so on. All of those things have to be done. But, you know, we haven't felt a great pressure to do things in a way that would hurry things along and perhaps make mistakes along the way. So we've been organic in our growth. And, you know, that's something that Jerry's taught me. With somebody with decades and decades of experience in the hotel business, he's taught me that oftentimes you'll make a decision, but it'll change five times over the next year. Just because that's the way things happen. And if you commit yourself to one thing and it's locked in forever, that's the way mistakes can sometimes happen and then you have to regret it and then undo commitments over time. So I think a really mature, organic way of looking at things is a way to optimize in the short term so that in the long term, you really reach a super premium product, which I think we have reached at this stage. And now only time is the way that we will be able to achieve an even better thing because we've got the foundations there now sitting in the Hunter Valley, maturing beautifully as our temperature differentials range from below zero up to 40 degrees. And that's another reason why we have, I think, a secret weapon compared to the always cold areas like Tassie or Scotland or Ireland and so on. I think the temperature seasonal variations is a fundamentally important secret weapon that, if anything, does give this accelerated maturation that everybody talks about, but nobody really has a way of doing it other than, you know, shooting loud speakers at their barrels or kind of rotating them or some other tricks that people talk about.
How about Jerry's whiskey palate? How's that developing? Because I think when we spoke a few years ago about this project, from what you told me, he had a bit of work to do on his his sensory appraisal of whiskey.
I think that is a very generous and complimentary approach. I don't know whether I should elaborate on that any further, but I can simply say that Jerry is not one to spontaneously request a dram in the evening, which is something that I would be commonly indulging in. And yet I asked Jerry to have a taste of our most recent expression only a week ago, and his eyes absolutely lit up and he went, "Oh my goodness, that tastes like whiskey." And that was the greatest compliment that I could possibly receive from Jerry Schwartz. So we are working on this project. We are trying to improve his palate and, you know, that's part of the journey, James.
Well, John, I'm certainly looking forward to getting my first taste of Two Doctors Whiskey. So thanks for joining us for a chat and best of luck with the project.
Absolute pleasure, James. Thanks very much indeed.